Wow. I was really impressed with Monica's feared fantasy. It was effective because she wrote down the worst criticisms she could think of. When she examined them one by one, she realized they were just a lot of hot air. Of course, the critic is far worse than any real human being would ever be, because the critic actually says all these terrible things to you. However, the outcome of these two techniques is the same. When you find truth in the criticisms, you take all the wind out of the critic's sails, and you realize that you never really had anything to fear in the first place. Almost everybody feels shy or awkward from time to time. For most people, these feelings aren't much of a problem. But shyness can rob you of self-esteem, hold you back in your career, and prevent you from forming intimate, loving relationships. Shyness results from a mental con. When you're feeling shy, you're telling yourself things that simply aren't true, but you don't realize it. Why does this happen? People who feel shy aren't stupid. Why would they believe such distorted messages? It's because the negative thoughts act as self-fulfilling prophecies, so they appear to be true when they're not. I once treated a likable but painfully shy young man named Roger. Roger was from India and worked for a biotechnology firm in Philadelphia. Grocery stores were sheer misery for him. When he was standing in line, waiting to check his groceries, he'd stare at the floor and try to make himself invisible because he felt so awkward and out of place. Roger often watched talk shows on late-night television. He thought that most Americans were as outgoing and sociable as talk show hosts like David Letterman and Jay Leno. He was even convinced that total strangers in grocery store lines constantly chatted and made witty jokes with each other. He had no real evidence for this, because he was always staring at the floor, but he was pretty sure it was true. Of course, Roger couldn't think of a single witty thing to say when he was standing in line. When it was his turn to check his groceries, he'd pay and leave as quickly as possible, feeling certain that every person there was judging him and could see how shy and awkward he felt. Roger also felt uncomfortable when he was walking down the street. He was convinced that people looked down on him because of his dark skin and long hair. Sometimes he'd get so mad about how unfair it all was that he'd look up and give someone a dirty look, as if to say, "Gotcha, I caught you looking down on me." Of course, the angry expression on his face alarmed the person he was staring at, so that person did look surprised. This convinced Roger that people really were looking down on him, and that he'd caught them in the act. I proposed an experiment that might help Roger put his negative thoughts to the test. I suggested that when he was in a grocery store line, he could force himself to raise his eyes up from the floor and look around to see what was really going on. Then he could count how many people were chatting with strangers in an animated manner and how many were minding their own business. Roger reluctantly agreed to try this experiment the next time he was in a grocery store. The following week, he reported that it had been extremely difficult to stop staring at the floor, but when he forced himself to look around, he was surprised to discover that none of the people in line were chatting or telling witty jokes. Instead, most of them were staring off into space or reading the National Enquirer. They weren't making clever comments to the person who checked their groceries either. They just said, "How much is it?" or "Thank you," and were on their way. We were off to a great start, but weren't home yet, as Roger was still having trouble connecting with other people. I suggested he try smile and hello practice next. I told Roger to smile and say hello to at least 20 strangers during the next week. He could choose people he saw on the way out of my office, strangers walking down the street, or people shopping in the mall. I advised him to keep track of how many people responded to him in a negative, neutral, or positive manner. That way, he could test his belief that people were judging him and looking down on him. He wasn't at all enthusiastic about this assignment and resisted intensely. He said it was way too anxiety-provoking and insisted that people would think he was some kind of weirdo. When he left the office, he made a half-hearted promise to try, but it was clear that he had no intention of following through. The next week, Roger confessed that he hadn't done the smile and hello practice. He insisted that his smile would look fake. I told him that wouldn't be the end of the world and created a game called Smile on Command. I told Roger that we could take turns shouting smile. Whenever the other person said that word, we had to put a smile on our faces and say hello, no matter how anxious or phony we were feeling. This exercise was hard for me, too. I've always felt inhibited about having to smile on command because when I was little, I had a crooked smile and was often teased about it. But the game was a lot of fun. Every time I shouted, smile, Roger would produce a ridiculous, fake-looking smile and say, hello there. He looked so silly that it made me giggle. Then Roger would laugh, and suddenly his fake smile became genuine. If you want to try this exercise with a friend or family member, I think you'll find it amusing. In spite of our success with this game, Roger resisted the smile and hello practice for several more weeks. He kept making up excuses about why he couldn't or shouldn't have to do it. I knew that if I could just get him to loosen up and interact with people, it would go a long way toward helping him break out of his shell. He was actually quite charming and likable, but he wasn't giving himself a chance. At the time, my wife was working in my clinic as part of her clinical psychology training. She was also treating Roger in separate sessions. We decided to meet with him together and lay down the law as a team. We told Roger that this was the treatment we were offering and that he must do it. Perhaps it was a bit like two parents doling out tough love. Roger reluctantly agreed to do it, even though he was sure it would be horribly humiliating and anxiety-provoking. When he came in for his session the next week, he was on a high. He said he'd smiled and said hello to many people and was surprised that nobody had given him any dirty looks. In fact, most of the people had smiled back in a friendly way. He'd even gotten into animated discussions with several people. This blew his mind, and he felt exhilarated. He said he didn't feel at all shy anymore, but was talking to people like crazy all day long. Roger felt so good that he decided to terminate his treatment within a couple of weeks. I wondered if the results would last, or if his sudden improvement was just a flash in the pan. Several years later, Roger called and asked if he could come in for a tune-up session. He was concerned about a career decision and needed some help sorting out his options. I was very happy to see him again and asked how he'd been doing. He said that his shyness was ancient history and that he was totally uninhibited and chatted with people everywhere all day long. He'd dated lots of wonderful women and now had a steady girlfriend whom he adored. When I present Roger's case in professional workshops, therapists often ask, would you still have used smile and hello practice if Roger had been an unpleasant, awkward fellow? What if people really had rejected him? I believe that the treatment should always be tailored to each person's unique circumstances. Roger was charming, so it seemed likely that he would have a positive experience when he did the smile and hello practice. If I'd been working with someone different, I might have used different techniques. I'd never intentionally set anyone up for humiliation or failure. Smile and hello practice may work differently in different parts of the country. In California, I say hello to strangers all the time, and I usually get positive responses. But in New York City, it would be different. A colleague and I once said hello to 40 strangers in 15 minutes while walking around Rockefeller Plaza, and not a single person acknowledged us. If you keep this limitation in mind, smile and hello practice can often be a lot of fun.